Morning of today's Daf Mechoros Nun Aleph. We're on the top of Nun Aleph Amud Aleph, finishing up a little bit of our currency talk, and then we move on to discuss what you can, what commodities you could use in order to redeem your firstborn son. Okay, so currency talk. So yesterday was the Daf Nun in Mechoros that dealt with currencies and the various monies that could be used in order to redeem. To succinctly repeat what we learned yesterday, the Torah says that you have to pay 5 salim in order to redeem your son. The 5 salaim amount to how many silver coins? The coin back then, the popular coin back then, were the dinarim, the zuzim. So how many of the silver coins do you have to use? So the simplest way to say it is 20. You need 20 of those coins in order to redeem them. Of course, the coins change over the course of time and history and geography. And so yesterday we went through a number of different currencies around the world. Arabia, Syria, Roman coins, and also you have to adjust. You have to account for the fact that if it's a gold coin, we talked yesterday. According to Rashi, the exchange rate between silver and gold was 1 to 25. Better 25 to 1. According to Rashi, is the exchange rate between silver and gold. So anyway, so all these things have to be taken into consideration. But again. In terms of the actual commodity itself, so it doesn't actually have to be coins. The Mishnah said that yesterday. Mishnah says it could be kesef or shavah kesef. Mm-hmm. So if it's something that is equivalent to 5 salim, if it's any item that's equivalent to 5 salim, that would be fine as well. Okay. Those are all the things that we learned in the course of yesterday's daf. And now we're picking it up right where we left off yesterday, top of Nun Aleph Amud Aleph. So the Gemara tells us, Shoshan Shavah, Chamisha Shonish, Vesham Mefat, Vechule. The Mishnah goes on to discuss that when there are other payments in the Torah that you have to pay. So you have to be using the Manishal Tzuri. So the Gemara says, Hasul Amali. Now the Gemara is bothered by the repetitive nature of the Mishnah. You go back to yesterday's daf and you review the Mishnah. The Mishnah is actually on the bottom of Mem Tesamad Aleph. Sorry. Mem Tesamad Beis. So the Mishnah there writes, I'm just rereading the Mishnah quickly. Chamish Slime Shaben Bemanitzuri. So the 5 slime that you have to pay for your son. So that is paid in Manitzuri, the currency that was current at the time of the Mishnah. And then the Mishnah goes on to say, Shoshim Shalavad, Chamisha Shaonish, Veshamafate, Umea Shomotzi Shemra, Kulam B'Shekel HaKodesh, B'Manitzuri. So you're paying Shekel HaKodesh using Manitzuri. So the Mishnah is repeating itself, meaning you could just simply write at the front of the Mishnah that everything's in Manitzuri and then list all the things that are listed. And meanwhile, the Mishnah is going into now a repetitive mode. So how do you understand that? That's the Gemara's question. So Hasulamali Hatan Ale Resha, Onis Motzi Shemra Itzurich. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why I need it because of the cases of Onis and Motzi Shemra. Sakadat Chamina, Kevin Deloksiv Beishkalim. So the Gemara is pointing out the following. If you look in the Torah, by Onis and Mefata. So the Parsha of Onis, the Parsha of Mefata. So you'll find in both of them, Pitui, by the way, is in Parshas Mishpatim, Onis is in Parshas Kisetze. So you'll see both of them, and you'll see that the Torah mentions the number, but doesn't actually mention the currency itself. The Torah does not say the word Shkalim. Same as Zuzim Be'alma, so if the Torah doesn't say Shkalim, so I could say, I could use Zuzim. Meaning I could use any recognized coinage. So Kamashlan, Demelev Kayafi Mahadadi. So the Chiddush is that no, that they are Shkalim. In other words, the amount that you pay is a shekel, which is the Mishnah's equivalent of a sella. Okay. Chutzman Shkalim. Now when it comes to the exception, so for all these payments that you could use anything. You could use Kesef, you could use Sheva Kesef. Anything of money equivalency. However, the notable exceptions is shkala, meaning machatzis or shekel. So on Rosh Chodesh Adar, there's an announcement made that we are now collecting the new shekel, the new machatzis or shekel. And everyone now is required to give a machatzis or shekel. There, it has to be coinage. You cannot give a commodity, even if the commodity is commensurate to the coin. You have to give actual coinage. Tana, the Gemara here, is going to quote a Brisa. Now, the Brisa is going to include two other things that are exceptions to the rule. So it's interesting that the Mishnah only listed one exception to the rule, and we're about to learn that there's a total of 3. What you have to say is Tana Vishaya, that the Mishnah is not giving us a full report of all the exceptions. The Mishnah is giving an example of the exceptions. Okay. Even though the Mishnah could have just as easily mentioned 2 more items and then filled out the list of exceptions. Okay, but Tana Vishaya. Tana, we learned in a brisa chutz min hashkalim ma'isa v'harei ayon. So when it comes to 3 different areas of halacha where money is required, so there it has to be coinage, it has to be a currency, and it cannot be just a simple commodity. One is shkalim, the machatzis a shekel, which we already just discussed, Two is Meiser, meaning Meiser Sheni, and three is going to be Re'ayon. Right? We're all familiar with Re'ayon. We learned it back in Chagiga, some time ago. Re'ayon is that when you go to the Beis HaMikdash on Yantiv, right? So we have a Yantiv coming up. So Bimher B'Yameinu, with the coming of Mashiach and the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So we're going to experience this ourselves. And that is that we're going to go to the Beis HaMikdash, and we cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash empty-handed. But rather, we have to have a carbon ola. It's called an olas re'iyah. An ola because I am seen in the Beis HaMikdash. So this olas re'iyah, so in terms of the purchasing of the olas re'iyah, so you need coins. You need actual coinage.
On Seder, as we remember.
Yeah. So the Shkalim Maisa Re'iyah. Shkalim did not, and now the Gemara is just quickly going over various statements that corroborate this information. Mitzar from Shkalim Ledar Bonos. Mimnei Masu Aderech. So in terms of Shkalim, so we know that the Machatz Shekel has to be a coin because the Mishnah in Shkalim tells us the following. So can you imagine our collector who is collecting, going door to door collecting silver coins? It comes to a point in time where his bag is really heavy, exceptionally heavy. So the Mishnah over there says he's entitled to do the following. Take those coins and actually convert it into a gold coin. Now, according to Rashi, the exchange rate between silver and gold is 125. So for every one gold coin, so that saves him from schlepping 25 silver coins of each coin being the same weight as a gold coin. So that's according to Rashi. Rabbi Natan, by the way, in yesterday's daf, goes absolutely out of his mind in terms of this idea that it's 25 to 1. Rabbi Natan says there's no such thing, right? He says it's approximately 12 to 1. 12 to 1 or maybe 10 to 1, but anyway, not like Rashi. I told you, modern exchange rate, I mentioned this yesterday, modern exchange rate between gold and silver is 50 to 1. 50 silvers for every gold. Anyway, so what the collector can do is he can take the 25 silver coins and convert it to one gold coin, and obviously that will save him a lot of backache, literal backache. So, mipnei masu aderech, maiser dechsi v'tzar tekesu biyadecha. As far as Meister Sheni is concerned, so the Torah says, Vitsarta kesef biyadecha. The word sarta literally means to bundle the coins in your hand. But also, the word sarta is the same word as tsura, which means that it has to be a minted coin. So that is the source in the Torah that tells us that when it comes to Meister Sheni and the pigeon and the redemption of Meister Sheni, you need coins. And finally, number three is Hareayon. Tini Rav Yosef Shelo Yavi Siga La Azara. Rav Yosef says that you cannot bring scraps of metal into the Azara, meaning that the coins that you use have to be silver coins, manitsuri, like we described in the Mishnah. You cannot use them at the Kesef Medina. Kesef Medina are just basically metal with a little bit of silver content in it, right? It's a same weight coin as the manitsuri, but only an eighth of it is silver. So that is unacceptable. You have to use pure silver coins when purchasing your olas re'iyah. Okay. We continue now with the upcoming Mishnah. Okay, we're Nun Aleph Amud Aleph at the Mishnah, and our discussion now in the Gemara is going to revolve around what can I use for pigeon aben. So, in the previous Mishnah, we talked about the value in terms of how much you need in order to be poda your son. So it has to be equivalent to 5 salaim. And we also learned in the previous Mishnah, it could be kesef v'sheva kesef. It could be money, it could be a money equivalency. Any item that has the minimum value of 5 salaim that you could use in order to give to the kohen. Is there any kind of limitation? Is there something I cannot use? That's our Mishnah.
The kohen has to accept?
The kohen will accept it. I don't mean to...
Does he have to insist? I want money. Oh,
I see. In other words, does he have to, can accept an equivalency? I would say it would be poor taste on the part of the kohen not to accept it. I know that's not a real halachic statement, but that would be my yeah. Ain podin lo ba'avadim v'lo b'shars v'lo b'karkal. So the Mishnah tells us what I can't use. So you can't use an eved kanani, you cannot use a shtar, and you cannot use karka. Okay, so eved kanani. So eved kanani, of course, is property. So if let's say I go over to the kohen and say, look, I just had a firstborn son. Here is an eved kanani. I'm giving it over to you. It has tremendous value. I'm sure it's at least 5 salaim. But the Mishnah says it's unacceptable for reasons which we're going to articulate why. Shtar, I have an account receivable. I have a note supporting my account receivable. And I go over to the kohen and I say, look, here's my account receivable. Take the note and you'll collect it and good. We're good. And the Mishnah says it's not acceptable. And karka and property. I give over a kohen a piece of property that I have. Okay, obviously, not physically giving him the property, but I hand him title to the property. And so now, what a tremendous gift I gave to the kohen. Gift. It's a redemption for the kohen. I give him actual property, the Mishnah says that's also unacceptable. So none of these things can be used as instruments in terms of relinquishing your obligation of Pidyon HaBen. And again, for reasons which we're going to articulate why in the Gemara. V'lo behekdeshos, then I cannot use hekdesh as well. Now that's a confounding statement of the Mishnah. I can't use hekdesh. Hekdesh doesn't belong to me. Hekdesh belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. Why would I have even entertained the idea that I'd be able to use hekdesh in order to redeem my son? So that's a wonderful question. Hold that thought. We're going to deal with that in the Gemara. Now, kasul kohen shu chayiv litein, chamisha slayim. Now, let's say I go over to the kohen and say, look, I had a firstborn son, mazel tov, and I owe you 5 slayim. Once again, mazel tov. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to write you an IOU note. Thank you very much. You know, I'd much prefer you actually give me the money, but okay, you're going to write me the IOU note. Fine, I'll accept the IOU note. So the Mishnah says that's really, you went about it all wrong. So, and the Mishnah says that if you write for the Kohen that you're obligated to pay him 5 slime, you write him an IOU. So chayiv litein lo. So now you have to pay the money to the Kohen, and here comes the next part of the Mishnah, ubeno eno padui. But oddly enough, your son is not redeemed. Now your son is not redeemed. Why? Because you wrote the IOU note. Now wait one second. I understand that the IOU note is unacceptable. Previously in the Mishnah, we talked about how I can't give him a shtar in general. So obviously the IOU note is unacceptable. But then I actually pay the money, and the Mishnah says, that the son is not going to be redeemed even after I actually pay the money. Why would that be? We're going to learn together in the Gemara. I'm going to give it away now. The reason why is because the Chachamim basically said, look, if you wrote a note and you paid the Kohen, so when the casual observer is watching what just happened, the casual observer is going to say, oh, do you know how the pigeon worked? It worked with the note. So people will think that it was the note that activated the pigeon and not the actual giving of the money. So what the Chachamim did is the Chachamim said, look, here's what we're going to do. Under those circumstances, I mean, they're limited circumstances. It's not happening very often. But under those circumstances, we're basically saying no to the pigeon. Meaning when you gave the money, because it was preceded by a note that you wrote, and we don't want people to think that the note actually was the instrument of pigeon, so therefore the money itself also is not going to be redeeming. What now is the father going to have to do? A second time he's going to reach into his pocket, take out another 5 slime, and hand that over to the Kohen. Now when the Kohen receives now the second 5 slime, so the Kohen now, it's his prerogative where what he can do is he can give it back to the person. If the Kohen would like to give back that extra 5 slime, he may do so. Now, can the Kohen give back the original 5 slime? So seemingly, in the Mishnah, the answer is no. In general, when you give the Kohen 5 slime without writing the note, can the Kohen give you back the money? It's a wonderful question. We're actually going to be discussing it later this morning. Let's say I set aside the 5 slime. I didn't get a chance to give it to the Kohen, but I put it aside. And then I lost it. So the Mishnah tells us, well, it's unfortunate for you. You're going to have to reach into your pocket, take another 5 slime, and actually give it to the Kohen. Pidyon does not take effect until the money is actually given over to the Kohen. Seems to be an obvious point. The Gemara actually has a drasha. The Mishnah has a drasha. The Mishnah says, Yielacha, the money is to you, you meaning the Kohen. He's the recipient. And then the Torah goes on to describe ufado sifdeh. And then the son is going to be redeemed. So the redemption of the son is only going to be activated only when the money actually gets into the hands of the Kohen. Masisin delo k'Rebbe. Our Mishnah is not like following the viewpoint of Rebbe. Now again, you know, we all know Rebbe is the editor of the Mishnayos. Rebbe is the one who put the Mishnayos together. But often is the time where the Mishnah is recording a position that's not conformed to his own position. Rebbe was totally comfortable with that. Meaning because he understood that not all the time is his position going to be the accepted position. And so here's one of those occasions where we have a Mishnah, and by the way, it's a Stam Mishnah. There's no names mentioned in the Mishnah, and meanwhile, it doesn't conform to Rebbe's viewpoint. What is Rebbe's viewpoint? Detanya Rebbe Omer, b'chol podim b'chol adam chutz min ashtaris. The only thing that you cannot use as an instrument of pigeon is only a shtar. But you could use, according to Rebbe, you could use Karka, you could use Evikanani. The only thing you can't use is a shtar. Now, my time at the Rebbe. So what's the basis of the Rebbe? Darsh ribu umiyut. So Rebbe darshins ribu umiyut. Right? Now it's a nice alliteration. Rebbe darshins ribui. So so as we've gone over, we've done this so many times throughout Shas, in terms of methodology of how to darshan the Torah, so we know that there are more than one way in terms of methodology. The way that we're most used to is because we say daily is Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says that when you have in the Torah a generality followed by specific, followed by generality, so that's what's called klal uprat uklal. However, not everyone agrees to Rabbi Shmuel. There are those who are of the opinion who say that you don't darshan it klal uprat uklal, but rather ribui imir ribui. What's the difference? So to say it succinctly, the difference basically is the following. If you darshan klal uprat uklal, that means to say that you take a look at the example that's given in between the two generalities, and we are going to take out the characteristics of the example, and in order to include anything else, it must match the characteristics. That's klal uprat uklal. As opposed to ribui imir ribui, where I take the same example in the middle, and I basically say it includes anything that is like that, and the miut is basically we're going to exclude maybe the thing that looks most not like the example that's given. When you darshan ribui imir ribui, so you're prepared to include a lot more than if you were to darshan klal uprat uklal, because klal uprat uklal, you need another item to match the characteristics of the example that's given. Okay, that's in a nutshell the difference between the two. The Gemara now points out that Rebbe, when he darshans using the methodology of ribui amir ribui. The Gemara actually takes us through how it looks according to Rebbe. Uftu yavmi ben chodesh tifte riba. So the Torah says that you're going to redeem without giving any qualification whatsoever. That's a generality. And kesef chamish shkalim miit. And then the Torah says that you have to use 5 salayim, so that is a limitation. And tifte riba. So riba umiyot v'riba, riba hakol. So when we start off with our first ribui, that comes to include everything. My rabbi, rabbi kol mili. So we start off by saying that what instrument can I use to redeem my son? Whatever I'd like. Umay miyot, miyot shtaras. And what is excluded? The only thing excluded is going to be a document, a loan document. V'rabbanan darshei klal uprat. Now the chachamim look at the very same psukim, but their methodology is called a prat. And now we're going to go through it according to the Chacham. Uftu yavmi ben chodesh klal. Be'erkecha kesesh chamesh eshkalim prat. Tifte chazav klal. Klal uprat uklal I ata dan ela ke'en haprat. So now using methodology klal prat uklal, so you have to take out the common characteristics. What are they? Ma prat mefor shavar hamita tav v'gufo mamon. I've called davar hamita tav v'gufo mamon. So it has to be something which is movable, because currency is movable. And it has to have intrinsic value, because currency has intrinsic value. Yatsu karkar shema tatalin. Now karka has intrinsic value, but it's not movable. Yatsu avan shuk shlo karka. Now evikanani is linked with karka. Hekish connects the two. Go back to Parshas Bahar. Rashi quotes the pasuk. Anyway, an evikanani and karka are joined. So whatever is true by karka is going to be true by evikanani. If a karka cannot be used as an instrument to be poda, so neither can an evikanani be used. Yatsu shtar shafa pisha mitatalim ein gufo mamon. Now when it comes to a shtar, so a shtar is movable, but it does not have intrinsic value. There is paper value to the shtar, maybe 1 or 2 pennies, but in terms of the actual document itself, it does not have intrinsic value. All it represents is that proof that you're owed money. Fine. So it allows you to collect, but it itself does not have intrinsic value. And so therefore, it doesn't work. If you are using ribui meter ribui, so you're including everything, only thing excluded is going to be shtar, according to Rebbe. As opposed to our Mishnah using methodology klal uprat uklal, so it has to be something which is movable and has intrinsic value. So therefore, you can't use shtar of evikanani and karka. Amle Ravina Lamarem of Rebbe ribui meter darshei ha Rebbe klal uprat uklal darshei. So the Gemara says, now as far as Rebbe Shita is concerned, I'm going to show you an example where Rebbe uses klal uprat uklal, unlike what we said just moments earlier, where he says he uses ribui miut. And where do we see this? We've seen this actually in our very own Masechta.
One method excludes the other? Like if you're committed with one method, that's it?
That's the way the Gemara is presenting it. Bim martseya detanya. Martseya. So in the circumstance where the Eved Ivri, not Eved Kanani, but the Eved Ivri says, look, after 6 years, I'd rather stay. I'd rather not leave. I really like it here. So there is an option for him to stay until Yovel, but he needs his ear to be pierced. So what he does is that he goes and by the doorpost, his ear is going to be placed right up against the doorpost, and with an instrument, his ear is going to be pierced. Now, what kind of instrument can be used? Ooh. So interesting how this is now discussed in the context of ribu imiut versus kol prat. Marzeinli ela marzein minan the rabbis hasul v'hasira v'amach v'amikdach v'amichtav. How about using any other instrument? And it doesn't even have to be metal, right? A list of instruments over here, including even a splinter. So tamalam rav lakachta l'rabbos kol davar shenokach biyad divrei Rabbi Yosi v'Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yosi v'Rabbi Yehuda says, basically, you can use whatever instrument you want. We have a ribui. And that ribui allows us to include any instrument that's going to create a hole. And Rabbi Omer Marzeya, Amar Marzeya Meyucha Shemateches Av Kol Shemateches. Now Rabbi is more limiting. Rabbi says it has to be metal. And so now, what is at the core of the debate over here? V'raminim b'maika miflagi de Rabbi Darshei Klal Prat. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda Darshei Ribu Amiyut. So Rabbi Darshan's Klal Prat. And obviously it's confounding. Because in our discussion of what instrument I could use for Pidgin HaBen, so Rabbi Darshan Ribu Amiyut. And now when it comes to the Marzeya, Rabbi's Darshan Klal Prat. And what are you doing over here? In other words, you have to go with one approach, and seemingly you cannot shift from one approach to another approach. So in Ba'alma, Rebbe Kala Prat Darshe. So the Gemara says, well, sometimes, we'll say it like this. Rebbe generally holds Kala Prat, and that's his methodology. But sometimes even Rebbe will shift over to Ribu Imiut. When is he going to make the shift? So we're going back to the Gemara in Chulin, where we were not there. It was not so long ago that we were there, and the Gemara in Chulin talks about kosher aquatic animals. So for aquatic animals, they have to have snapir v'kaskeses. But however, based on a ribu imiut, so that's only true if it is running water. If it is a stationary body of water. So I'm oversimplifying right now. So if it's a stationary body of water, so then the aquatic animals would be permitted as long as they are native to that stationary body of water. Okay, the Gemara back in Chulin. Anyway, Rebbe over there says that we're going to use, based on the teaching of Rebbe Shmuel, that we're going to be using Ribu Imiut. Why? Because of the unusual presentation of Ribu Imiut. Over there, it is Ribui, and then miut. It's the generality immediately followed by another generality, followed then by a specific. Now what we're going to do is we're going to take this specific and we're going to put it right in between the two generalities. But because the Torah presents it in an unusual fashion, that's the tell of the Torah that basically we're going to shift from going to klal prat to ribui miut. The Gemara says that is how, and over here we're going to say the same thing. It's going to be that Rebbe allows for the shift to go from klal prat to ribu imiut. V'rabanan, and now as far as the chachamim are concerned, amri kedamina b'marav v'kol makam shatamos ishteklal sasmuchim zelazeh, hatel prat b'neim v'donam b'chol prat. And the chachamim simply disagree. Even though they acknowledge over here that it is an unusual presentation, it's a klal, followed by a klal, followed then by a specific example. So what they're going to do is they're just going to take the specific example, pick it up, not physically, obviously, but pick it up, put it right into the, right in between the two klalim, and treat it like a klal, part of klal. Simple, straightforward, and that's the Chachamim's viewpoint. And so again, what comes out now is, what instrument can I use for Pidgin HaBen? So anything of value is what we learned in the previous Mishnah. And our Mishnah limitation. What's the limitation? So our Mishnah has it that you cannot use Karka, Evikanani, and Shtaros. According to Rebbe, the only thing you can't use is a Shtar. And again, the Machlokus is predicated on which methodology are you using in Darshing the Torah. According to Rebbe, we're using Ribu and Miut. According to the Chacham, when we're using klal prat klal, straightforward. Hard to say. I don't know. Not hard to say. I just don't know. V'lo behekdesha. You cannot redeem your firstborn son using hekdesh. The Gemara asked the obvious question, which I foreshadowed back in the Mishnah. Pshita lav didei ninhu. Don't understand, says the Gemara. Hekdesh does not belong to you. How can you even entertain a discussion of using Hekdesh? There's no discussion to be had. Hekdesh means it's property of the Beis HaMikdash. It's not yours. You cannot use it for Pidgin HaBen. So what does the Mishnah even mean? So Ema, so the Gemara says, okay, you're right. The question's so strong. What we're going to have to say is the following. V'lo Hekdeshos b'chol elu. So what the Mishnah means is that when I'm redeeming Hekdesh, I also work with the same limitations. So under the circumstances when you're redeeming Hekdesh, meaning by carbon, obviously it's an unredeemable item, but when the carbon gets a blemish, or for that matter, any other hekdesh which only has kedushas damim. So obviously, it's open to be redeemed. And what can I use to redeem it? So I could use kesef v'shava kesef. And what about limitations? So the limitations, like we discussed in our Mishnah, same limitations. I can't use karka and nevikanani, and I cannot use shtaros.
So this is a statement, it's not about Pidur Aben.
Right, correct. Kasav l'koin shu chayv lo chamisha shlaim chayv liten lo. So we're going over the part of the Mishnah where I write an IOU to the Kohen, followed then up by I pay the Kohen. What did we learn together in the Mishnah? Your son is not redeemed, even though you paid. Because it was followed by the writing of an IOU. And the writing of the IOU was a mistake. You shouldn't have done it. Amar ula davar tor b'no padui, l'chishi yitain. My time ain't b'no padui, exam reshem yomru podi mishtar. So I know I said this back in the Mishnah, but here the Gemara is spelling it out. The reason why paying is not going to redeem your son is because you started with an IOU note. And what people will think is that the redemption was caused by the IOU note. The payment is just because you're a good person and you are doing what you said you were going to do. But people will think that the actual redemption is coming through the note, and that doesn't work. And so as Xerah Derabanan, if you write a note, even though you paid, but the Chachamim said, but we don't want people walking away with the erroneous impression that it's the note which is the instrument, and therefore the Chachamim say that even when you pay, your son is not redeemed.
What about a verbal IOU?
Oh, that's a good question. And I don't know the answer. Okay, I assume it would be okay, but I'm not sure.
So how would you redeem
it? So you have to now go into your pocket and take out a second five salaim and hand that over to the Kohen. Tani Tanakama derav Nachman no padu lichishi yitain. Now somebody said over a brice in front of Rav Nachman in this scenario where you first write an IOU and then you pay. And the person quoting the brisa says, and when you pay the first time, your son is redeemed. So Rav Nachman hears this, and Rav Nachman says, I do not accept that brisa. Now, I'm not rejecting the brisa out of hand, but the brisa is representing minority viewpoints. Amalei Rav Nachman zu devi Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda stimasa, Rami la zu devi Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon stimasa. Yes, there are some tonight who say that under the circumstances, your son is redeemed, but that's not the accepted viewpoint. Rather, the accepted viewpoint is that your son is not redeemed because it's followed up. It's following an IOU, and we don't want people to think it's the IOU that actually served as a redemption. So therefore, when you pay, your son is not redeemed. The Gemara now is going to quote a brisa corroborating our Mishnah. Let's say I go over to 10 Kohanim, right? You have the Kohanim are getting together, whatever the occasion is, and I have to redeem my son, and I go walk into a room and the 10 Kohanim over there. Okay. It's a slightly uncomfortable situation, right? I was planning on giving it to one Kohen, but there are 10 Kohanim. So what the Brisa allows you to do is to put the money down on the table and tell the Kohanim, look, gentlemen, right? Do me a favor, all right? I'm out of here, but here's the money. Okay, good. Good. So, b'zeacher zeh yatsa. Another point the Brisa tells us is that if I, let's say, I'm paying the Kohen in installments, right? I can't afford the five shlaim all at once. So every time I see the Kohen, I give him a little bit more. So when we get to the aggregate total of five shlaim, good, your son's redeemed. Now, let's say you give him the five salayim, and we're not talking about the case of the IOU note. We're talking about a case where I just simply hand the five salayim over to the Kohen, and the Kohen says, thank you very much, your son is redeemed. And here's the money back. And the Braisa tells us that's totally acceptable. Rabbi Tarfon would do this on a regular basis, where he would receive the Pidyon HaBen money, and then he would go back and he would return it. The Chachamim heard this. The Chachamim were enamored. You know, Rabbi Tarfon kept this halacha. Now, the way it originally is presented sounds a little bit like a backhanded compliment, right? Rabbi Tarfon kept this halacha, right? Okay, good. You hear it. You hear the backhanded. So the Gemara immediately just amends halacha zu v'sulo, only this halacha. So Elakim Zeh Af Halachazu. So Rabbi Tarfon kept even this halacha. Now, really interesting. A Kohen is within his rights to return the pigeon ben after having received it. It's now why right now why not? Meaning it's his and he can do whatever he wants with it. Okay. There certainly is a point to take into consideration is the following. If you know that you have a Kohen in the community who regularly returns the pigeon ben, I cannot speak for you, but I'll speak for myself. I will find that Kohen. I will find that Kohen and I will make sure that that's the Kohen that I use for Pigeon Aben. And so what becomes the problem then? The problem then is that when the Kohen is currying favor in order to be the receiving Kohen, so we have a term for that. It's called Kohen HaMesayeh Begranos. Right. So when he does something that curries favor, so isn't that something which, generally speaking, is a non-preferred behavior? Okay. So that's something to take into consideration. But obviously over here, I mean, you can easily in our minds make the distinction of he's not benefiting. In other words, he's currying favor to do what? To receive the pigeon of ben money and then return it back? Meaning he's not gaining. Okay, but certainly something to take into consideration. The Gemara follows up with a great story. I mean, great meaning you'll see it's not going to go well for one person, but it's such an interesting story. Rabbi Chanina, have a rag of a shakal mahadir. So Rabbi Chanina also followed the practice of Rabbi Tarfon. He was a Kohen. He received the Pigeon HaBen money, and regularly he would return the money after having received it. Okay. Chazilo gavad ka'azov ase kameh. So there was a person who found Rabbi Chanina and used him as his Kohen for the 5 shalim. Now Rabbi Chanina did not immediately return the money. And so the guy's like wondering to himself, is everything okay? Meaning Rabbi Chanina normally returns the money. I was expecting my money back. And so what he made sure to do every day is walk in the same direction as Rabbi Chanina and to quote unquote bump into Rabbi Chanina. I didn't know you were here today. He knew full well that he was going to be there today. And hi, Rabbi Chanina. And he made himself available to Rabbi Chanina on multiple occasions. Right? Not so subtly hinting to Rabbi Chanina, hey, right? Would you? Right. So he kept reminding Rabbi Chanina that he was there and expecting his money back. So So Rabbi Chanina now gives the tochacha. He reprimands this person. You did not give the 5 shalim with full resolve. You're an Indian giver. You were giving me the pigeon HaBen money with the expectation that I would give it back to you. That's no good. Midam bish. That is something which is bad. Hilkach ein beno padoi. And therefore your son is not redeemed. Now it's interesting. Now clearly over here, your son is not redeemed. Now what did he mean? What did Rabbi Chanina mean by that? Did he mean that if I give it back to you, it's not redeemed? Therefore I'm keeping it? Or did he mean even something stronger? He meant that because you didn't pay me with full resolve, so therefore that which you gave me previously didn't work at all. Okay, so Rashi actually entertains both of these ideas, and in terms of where are we now at this point where the guy did not expect that the Kohen would actually keep his money.
If he didn't say anything, or this is just conjecture based on the report, I mean, he's, you know, to certain degrees he's conjecturing. How could he like that?
I mean, he does have evidence. I mean,
But isn't that considered the Baruch Shabbat?
Okay, it's a fair question. I don't have a question. The question is that the person didn't articulate to Rabbi Chanina that he wants his money back.
Yeah, but by doing that,
it was innuendo, it was hints, and so what Ben's asking is that this is not he didn't verbalize it, and in halacha we call this Baruch Shabbat. Okay, so he wants it back, but okay. Anyway, it's fair. I don't have a good response. Tosos over here is bothered by another wonderful question. Throughout halacha, we know matana manach zahachzir works. Right? I give you a gift with the understanding that I'm giving it to you for a limited time, and then I'm going to get it back. Throughout halacha, we say matana manach zahachzir is considered a matana. That is considered a transaction. Is this any worse than a matana manach zahachzir? Okay, so Tosus asked that question. Tosus also responds to that. See Tosus for a discussion on that point.
Exception.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm gonna repeat. See Tosus for a discussion on this topic. He addresses this issue.
Do you know the dollar value of 5 shalim?
How much does it actually come out to in modern dollars? I don't know. I don't know. I had a firstborn son, right? Full disclosure, I had a firstborn son, came out via cesarean. So I don't know. I don't know. Okay.
You save
some money.
This is not a
matur.
It's not an obligation.
Agreed. That's not Tosfos' approach, but okay. Hamafrish pidyon benov avid chaya b'achriyoso.
Did you get for your second son?
The Gemara, no. He's not the firstborn. He's not the, right?
That came up last week.
Right? The Minayan. So the Gemara, Minalan. So how do we know? How do we know that the obligation is not going to be fulfilled until it gets to the hands of the Kohen? So the Gemara now has almost a funny discussion. It's funny because we know the Mishnah gave us a drasha, and after the Gemara is going to go through a couple of drashas, the Gemara then is going to ask the question: Why are you giving me any other drasha? We have the Mishnah, and the Mishnah actually cited a drasha. So stay tuned as the Gemara is going to ask that question. Minalan Amar Rishim and Lakish Asi Erech Erech Mi Erchin. We learn it based on Exerisha from Erchin, and by Erchin we know that when you make an Erech pledge and you go to the Beis Hamikdash and you pay the money, you have not satisfied your obligation until you actually paid the money. No different over here. Rav Dimi Amar Rav Yochanan, and we have the word Erech in both places, both by Pidyon HaBen and by Erchin. Erchin found at the tail end of Vayikra, Parsha Bechukosai, last week's Parsha. Amar Rav Yonasan v'chol b'chor banecha, I'm sorry, Rav Dimi Amar Rav Yonasan v'chol b'chor banecha tifdeh v'lo yiru panai reikam. V'yalef reikam reikam me'olas ri'yah. So we learn it out based on Xerishava from Olas Re'iyah. We just discussed Olas Re'iyah earlier this morning. Olas Re'iyah, the mitzvah to give a carbon ola every time you go to the Beis HaMikdash and Yantif, the three regalim. And so there you have not discharged your obligation until you actually pay the money. Ma Olas Re'iyah chai b'achriyuso, afijan aben chai b'achriyuso. So Maska v'Rav Papa kra l'kra, and Rav Papa now asks the question so succinctly, so beautifully. What are you doing? You're giving me other drashas? We don't need other drashas. The Mishnah gave us a drasha of how we know that you have not discharged your obligation until you actually pay the money. And even though you set it aside, it doesn't work until you actually pay the money. And we had a drasha on the Mishnah. The Mishnah noted, right, going back to what we learned earlier this morning, right, Yiyelecha padotifte. Only when the Kohen gets his money, then and only then is the redemption fulfilled. So, Kra Lekra, Elam Rapapa Hakediktani Taima, Yiyelecha ach padotifte. V'chi itmar d'reish lakish a'reisha itmar. So the Gemara says, of course you're right. We don't need another drasha. As far as the Xerishavas we just learned together, they're to make a different point, a point that we learned earlier in our perek. Rachmanus, the son died after 30 days of age. The father still has an obligation of pidyon haben. Meisach ha'shoshim yom afa pishlo nasan yitain minalan. Now for that, we never said why. We never gave a drasha in terms of why that should be. And on that, we have now the various opinions. Amr Shimon Lakish Asi Arech Arech Me'erchen, Rav Dim Amr Rav Yosan V'chol B'chor Banecha Tifteh V'lo Yerpanei Rekam, Ma'alahalan Yorshin Chayavim, Afkan Yorshin Chayavim. So, in the circumstances of Erech and of Olas Re'iyah, if money was set aside for an obligation and Rachmanis the person died, so but you still, the obligation is still standing and it's still going to be paid. Hagam over here. If the person had a son and the son survived more than 30 days, so now there's an obligation. And despite the fact that Rachmanis, the son, is no longer alive, but still there's an obligation, you still have to pay. So these drashas are there to teach us that halacha, not our halacha. Our halacha of achrayus, that we already have our own, we have our own drasha. Okay, adkan. Okay, we'll stop over here. Today we finished the topic of currencies. What can I use to redeem a firstborn son? Any commodity. The only limitations are Eved Kanani, Karka, and Shtaros, because either they don't have intrinsic value or they're not movables. We went over again today the topic of Klal HaPrat versus Ribu Imut, a popular topic throughout Shas. We discussed writing an IOU note to the Kohen that is not encouraged. In fact, just the opposite. It's discouraged. Even after you pay the first time, it's not going to work. You're going to have to pay a second time. In general, can a Kohen, after having received this Pidyon HaBen money, can he return the money? Rabbi Tarfon did. Rabbi Chanina did. Can you, when you give the money, can you expect it to be returned? No. In fact, not only can you not expect it to be returned, you should not expect it to be returned. Rabbi Chanina chastised the person who was expecting his money to be returned. And finally, in terms of the end of the Mishnah, the redemption does not occur until the Kohen actually gets his money. How do we know that? We know because of a drasha. The Mishnah gave us a drasha. The other drashas to solidify a previous point made in our Perek.